The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. Monday, April 8th, 2024. I am Seth Leibson. Mr. Bill, how are you, sir? Young David Dull, my producer, how are you, sir? And Miss Terry. For the rest of you, it's 602-508-0960, 602-5080-960. Hope you all had a great weekend. I would like to read from David Harsanyi over at The Federalist, if I might. It was Al-Quds Day last Friday. To celebrate the occasion, protesters in Dearborn, Michigan, chanted death to America and death to Israel, while a speaker named Tariq Bazi declared the United States, a place that's afforded him the liberty to openly support rapists, murderers, and terrorists, one of the, quote, rottenest countries on the planet. Quote, it's the entire system that has to go, close quote. He explained that to cheers of what we assume were a lot of American citizens in Dearborn. As Seth Mandel notes, there's Charlottesville every other day in America, and barely anyone on the left cares. Most progressives, let's face it, either tacitly or openly support this kind of rage. Let me pause before I go back to David Harsanyi for a moment. Joe Biden loved to talk about the reason for his running for president had to do with Charlottesville. And you can remember any number of speeches where he would talk about the rage and the contorted and twisted faces and the words that came out of Charlottesville. He even spoke about it when he would condemn MAGA after he became the president of the United States. Seth Mandel is quite right. These kinds of Charlottesvilles happen every other day in America. Except it's not about saving this monument or destroying that monument. In this case, it's actually death to America. And one wonders why Joe Biden can't summon any moral outrage to condemn that. Is Charlottesville any better or worse? That was a fight over Civil War monuments. How about a fight over, how about a condemnation of those who yell death to America? Or for that matter, death to any other country, which is in and of itself a call to genocide or insurrection, which I thought we were also supposed to be against. If I may return to David Harsanyi, Al-Quds Day, it's a kind of international Islamic Nuremberg rally. It was conceived by Ayatollah Khomeini and his gang during the Islamic Revolution, only a few months before Iranians murdered 8 U.S. servicemen and took 66 American hostages. I assure you, participants aren't merely critical of Israel's housing policy in Judea or civilian-to-combatant kill ratios in the war against Hamas. They want all 7 million Jews in the country of Israel dead or scattered into DIMI status whence they once were. Where is the outrage from these folks who have fainting spells every time a Republican criticizes far-left moneybags George Soros, cowering in a deathly fear that a progressive podcaster bro might accuse them of being Islamophobic, one imagines. Leftist and anti-Semitic pro-Hamas activists are vandalizing buildings, threatening Jews, cheering on martyrs, and shutting down events. Where are all the government officials who keep warning us that anyone wearing a MAGA baseball hat is probably the next Timothy McVeigh? It's not like radicalized Muslims ever engage in terrorism, I guess. But if parents who are sick of school boards undermining their children's education and futures are smeared as a domestic terror threat by this administration, surely those chanting death to America deserve a little bit of a close look, don't they? Granted, it would be weird. The same Jew haters who attend Quds Day rallies or write for the Washington Post are the people Joe Biden is now cynically trying to mollify in his effort to win the 2024 presidential race and, as he puts it, save democracy. Delegations of Democrats are sent to placate these defenders of barbarism and terror, sometimes quite literally. There is bad news for Democrats, though. Until the United States launches a strike on Tel Aviv, which is what ceasefire proponents are chanting in New York, these people will not be placated. There is no half measure here. That is not a call for a half measure when you are saying from the river to the sea, or when you are saying death to a country or death to two countries. To earn these votes, our president now spreads Hamas propaganda himself, as do most of the media, which have functionally or openly taken the side of the terror group. Indeed, no matter how many ceasefires Hamas rejects, Democrats still demand Israel unilaterally stop fighting the people who are holding American hostages. It is a demand we would never make of any other nation, a demand we would never abide by ourselves. Can anyone name me the five American hostages still being held? The answer is no, there's a reason for that. Ask yourself what that reason just might be. Even that's not enough, according to Harsanyi. The Biden administration, which creates and spreads myths about Jewish extremism in the West Bank to create a fake moral equivalence, is reportedly preparing to force Israel to mark products imported from Judea and Samaria or the West Bank, made by Jews with special labels. Vile, indeed. But Biden will not rest until there is no more Jewish presence on the West Bank, or his death to America constituents are happy, whichever comes first. Biden, it should be noted, is a vacuous political zombie who has never met a position he hasn't dropped for a vote. Today, he is surrounded by Obama-era advisors and Hamas sympathizers, though I repeat myself, who have long wanted the U.S. to be aligned with mullahs of Iran as a counterbalance to colonialist Western capitalists of Israel. And now that Democrats like Chuck Schumer have sold out to the vultures for a few votes in Dearborn, nothing holds back progressive Democrats from normalizing the anti-Semitism that already infects the hard left. This is not everyone's fight, I realize, Harsanyi writes. But remember, the same people who chant death to Israel inevitably wish death to America as well. And that's the key point. The enemies are the same for a reason. And it has nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do with ancillary excuses. The speaker who led that rally belongs to something called the Hadi Institute, H-A-D-I, based in Dearborn. Why don't you go to their website? Go to the Hadi Institute's website. I'll read it to you. Hadi Institute's focus is youth education and the raising of productive, positive, and proud Muslims. The best way to accomplish that is to teach by example. Those involved with our youth are expected to be practicing Shiite Muslims both on the job and in their personal lives. For that reason, our students' role models, parents, teachers, and volunteers are also part of the Hadi Institute community experience. Through ethical sessions, Islamic courses, teacher development, family enrichment, and more, all led by Islamic scholars, the Hadi Institute ensures Islamic principles are implemented at all levels. The love of Islam is a natural love, and by pressing the teachings of the Holy Prophet and his pure family sincerity and honesty to our students, they develop a holistic understanding of Islam and grow to love Allah and submit completely to his religion. Our vision is that students who attend and complete different programs at the Hadi Institute will become capable and responsible citizens to represent our faith and be future leaders of our community. They will have proper morals and ethics based on the pure teachings of our Prophet Muhammad and his pure household. They will have the necessary skills to become a productive, reliable, trustworthy citizen in our society and become the representatives of our faith through their positive actions and positive contributions to our community. Our objectives to fulfill the mission, Hadi Institute strives to create an Islamic atmosphere where students, parents, staff members, and stakeholders are learning to lead their lives according to the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad and his pure household. Will anyone forgive anyone if they take this person who works for the Hadi Institute and says, this man is preaching Islamic radicalism in America? Will anyone take exception if someone defends him, saying we shouldn't use the term Islamic radicalism? Well, is it radicalism to call for death to America? Most people would say yes. What they will deny is that it's Islamic. You can't call it Islamic radicalism. That would be Islamophobia. And it would be Islamophobia because you cannot attribute those beliefs to the Islamic religion. Okay. okay, maybe not everyone in the Islamic religion, but when you go to their website and they tell you that they are about spreading Shia Islam and the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad in their community, can we at least be forgiven a little bit to think that at least some of these representatives of Islam in America think at least they are Muslims and speaking on behalf of Islam? They tell us they are, and it shouldn't be homophobic or Islamophobic or any other kind of phobia to point it out when we are merely reporting what they tell us. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show, 602-508-0960. If the NEA and the teachers' unions can encourage Merrick Garland to cooperate with local law enforcement and send out letters that parents showing up to school board meetings are potential terrorists and potential insurrectionists that require monitoring, I should like Republicans or whoever. It would be better if it would be Democrats, but I don't think you can trouble the poor with begging, to borrow from Shakespeare. I would like some Republicans to write a letter to Merrick Garland that maybe he should have his FBI inspect this Institute of Education in Dearborn, Michigan, where they brag about employees who are shouting and leading rallies that shout and cheer on death to America. I would think that's a little bit more pressing than parents wondering about why their kindergartners have to learn about sexuality in their elementary schools. A little bit more pressing, I would think. It won't happen. It won't happen. Young David, did you watch the William Buckley special?
I was dancing.
Okay, but I sent you a link.
I never got that.
Okay. Will you watch it?
Sure.
Okay.
I'd be delighted to.
How was your dancing?
It was good. I was out until very early. I was out until the wee small hours of the morning.
Okay. Well, it's worth watching, folks. The American Masters 2-hour. It was about 2 hours. I think it was. Hour and a half. 2-hour special on William Buckley. There are some criticisms to make of it. There are a few things they actually got wrong, and there were a few implications they wanted you to draw that I think were inapt and deliberate. I give you PBS. But one of the historians who was part and parcel of it, who was interviewed on that documentary, on that American Masters special on Friday night, was Al Felsenberg, is Al Felsenberg, and he's going to join us in the second hour. He's an old friend. He wrote a book on William Buckley. Excuse me. He's been part and parcel of the American intellectual conservative movement for many years. Formerly, I think he's now retired, professor at the Annenberg School at the University of Pennsylvania, if I'm not mistaken. Has taught a lot of different places. But in any event, he'll be joining us, and we'll go over a few things. There were two things that were endearing from the special that I wanted to draw out. And I'll do some of them with Al. My favorite quote was this. They were asking in one interview, asking William Buckley what the magic to firing line was, because it was little more than two microphones and a cord and a clipboard. That's all it was. There was no what you call production value. You know what production value is? It's when David inserts parts to the show and, you know, does clips and music. That's in radio production value. In TV, it's everything else. It's all the graphics and staging and all that. They cared not a whit about it in firing line, and yet it lasted for what, young David? About 25 years, if I'm not mistaken. May have been
25 years. Something it was like going that. Probably at least so, 30 years.
Was it at least 30? It was the longest running, maybe?
66 they started.
Yeah.
And they ran all the way up until he even did some of those hour and a half long specials
yeah.
until the early 2000s.
Yeah, okay, good enough.
I don't know if the firing line special were going yeah. past maybe 1998 or so,
yeah.
but you can go online and watch some of his hour and a half long multi-panel debates,
yeah.
which he became more famous for in the late 80s and early 90s up until 2002.
Okay, so at least 30 years. And they asked him how he had such success with it, and he said, "Well, you just interview interesting people." And he said, and this is a quote I didn't know of his. He said, and 99 out of 100 people are interesting. And the 100th person is interesting for being the exception. That's so very Buckley. That's so very Buckley.
I like that.
You like that. He might be generous. Do you think 99 out of 100 people are interesting?
I think if you got to know enough people,
yeah,
and you got to
if you got to know them well enough, yeah,
there'd be something interesting,
yeah,
about everybody.
Yeah,
and
that's a good
interesting
point.
Because they're uninteresting,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very good point, young David. That's the right disposition. That's the right answer. If you got to know someone well enough, even if they don't appear interesting, you will find something interesting. What's the old TV show? It's the old New York police show. It's the City of a Thousand Stories or something like
oh,
that.
Oh, the Naked City.
Yeah, what's yeah. How does it open?
There are, what is it? I forget.
5 million stories.
They had to keep changing it as
yeah.
the city got bigger.
Right. Was it, there are 5 million stories in the Naked City?
Yeah.
Something like that?
It went up to all the way up to 5 million. There are 5 million stories in the Naked City. This
yeah.
has been one of them.
Yeah. If they did a show about Luckenbach.
There are two.
There are two stories.
There are two stories in Luckenbach, Texas. This is one of them. The other
and
one
say,
to
yeah, and the other one we'll do in a couple months. Yeah. Okay. Where was I? The other point about the Buckley documentary that I guess I hadn't thought a lot about it or enough about it. I knew of it, but it hadn't penetrated my thinking as much as it probably deserved to about him. They spent a lot of time on his wonderful ability to engender and endear friendships. And they had this wonderful quote from Milton Friedman. Y'all know who Milton Friedman is. And Milton Friedman was, the documentary taught, Milton Friedman was talking to some people that left the Buckley funeral. After William Buckley's funeral, Milton Friedman was asking them, what was his greatest virtue? What was William Buckley's greatest skill? And someone said, as you can imagine, someone said, well, his writing. And someone said, his debating, his oratory, his way with words. Four or five different answers that you would expect. And Milton Friedman said, you're all wrong. His greatest skill was friendship. And what an endearingly beautiful thing to hear from someone like Milton Friedman, who you see as, you know, a kind-hearted guy, I suppose, and cheerful in his own way, but, you know, kind of a hard scientist, you know, an economist, and kind of old school, right? And but Buckley had an old school to him, too, and it was friendship. And I thought about that, and I thought of a couple stories that if you push me on, I will happily share that illustrate that kind of decency and that kind of friendship. To people who, you know, were in all walks of life, quite frankly, you know, walked with kings and princes but didn't lose the common touch. I don't want to make such a fetish of this life or documentary, except that it's a life that deserves it. It's a brain that deserves it. And it has reverberations even now. Even now, which is why young David is getting a bumper sticker that says, don't demanitize the eschaton.
Oh, yeah?
I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Dombrowski brings us our culture and economy update. He is the president and founder of Grand Canyon Planning Associates, GrandCanyonPlanning.com, his website. You can learn a little bit more about what Grand Canyon Planning might be able to do for you, or reach out to John through the website. John, happy Monday. I hope you're doing well.
You bet, Seth. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Super.
One of the things that you are most well known for, and mm-hmm. deservedly so, is helping counsel people and get them through to a safe and secure retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough?
Yeah.
There's an interesting piece that is up over at Think Advisor that says, mm-hmm. do you need $1.5 million to retire? And that, you know, this notion of what you need to retire, this magic number, if you will,
right.
Has some different points of view about it. And I thought you might be the perfect person to walk us through it.
Yeah, I would say, you know, that sounds awful scary. You know, if I were to say, you know, to everybody out there, you need $1.5 million on average to retire, This was a new survey that was conducted, and that's the number they came up with. You know, $1.46 million on average to retire comfortably. And they're basically saying that that figure grew from the last year by 15%. And if they go back to 2020, because they do these surveys every year, but if you go back to 2020, it's increased by 50% from what they were saying just back then. So that's a staggering number in a four-year period of time, or not even four-year period of time, to have what was considered to be an amount that you would need to retire, maybe at $750,000, now to be $1.5 million. That, unless your investments grew by 25-30% every year, and your savings grew, that's probably an unrealistic number for many people. And so, first of all, I want to kind of put it in perspective, Seth.
Sure.
Everyone has a different view of maybe how they want to live in retirement.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that's a number that probably is not realistic for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe many people, depending on their spending habits and their expenses, that they can manage with less than that.
Yeah. I would imagine, and it depends on when they intend to retire as well.
That's true, yes.
And it depends on where they live, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The question that I'm sure is really panic-instilling, though, for a lot of people is, am I starting too late to plan? Is mm-hmm. it too late to get, you know, set for retirement?
Right. And I would say, without question, starting early is always best.
Yeah.
And that's why I encourage, you know, the young generation out there who maybe thinks, you know what, I don't need a lot of money to retire. I'm not going to worry about, you know, contributing to a retirement account. Maybe my company doesn't offer one, so I'm not going to investigate it and go outside the box and take, you know, advantage of maybe some of the other options that are available for contributing to retirement accounts, even if you don't have a company-sponsored plan. I would encourage everyone, yes, you should be contributing to something, even if it's a forced savings outside of a retirement account. But is it too late? Again, as I said, Seth,
everybody has... Yeah, that's going to depend, right? Yeah.
It's going to depend, right, where you're living, what your expenses will be in retirement, if you can have your house paid off, or if you're still going to have a mortgage. Do you have a pension you'll be receiving as well as Social Security? Will you be inheriting money? You know, think about that. There's a lot of baby boomers out there. There's a massive amount of wealth that will be transferring. I would encourage people not to use that as your retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there are certainly people out there that will be inheriting a massive amount of wealth. Just think about how much the real estate market has increased in value over the years, as well as the stock market.
Yep.
So all of those assets that will be transferring to the next generation will certainly be a shot in the arm for your retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I would encourage people not to count on that. But to plan and do the necessary work that you need to in order to get to that comfortable retirement. And that's what we do, as you said.
Yeah, I was going to say you're the best.
Yeah, and we can certainly put together some type of an income strategy for people so that we can see how much you need to save to get where you need to be. And you can go to our website at GrandCanyonPlanning.com and request an appointment with me right there.
Thank you, John.
You bet. Securities and Advisory Services offered through Creative One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Creative One Securities LLC, and not affiliated. Thank you, Seth.
Fastest tongue in the West. Well done, John. Thanks. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
Be right back. Well, welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. It's good to see my good buddy Tim Andrews walking in and saying hello. Tim, we always love it when you show up and say hi. Tim is the head of... he's the head of sales here at Salem Phoenix. And you and I were talking about, you know, manners. And to me, it's a they're important. They're a big they're as the great English scholar, philosopher, parliamentarian Edmund Burke put it, he wrote, "Manners are of more importance than laws. Upon manners, in great measure, the laws depend. The law touches us but here and there and now and then. Manners are what vex or soothe, corrupt or purify, exalt or debase, barbarize or refine us, but a constant, steady, uniform, insensible operation like that of the air we breathe in. They give their whole form and color to our lives according to their quality. They aid morals, they supply them, or they totally destroy them. And the reason I raise that, young Tim, is you and I had a conversation about a situation I found myself in and how to deal with it.
Right.
I had a highly unpleasant, might even say offensive experience with a local restaurant. It's not a restaurant that I've mentioned on air before. So if anyone's thinking I had a falling out with one of the regulars I promote, no, promote, talk about highly. No, it's not that. It's a different restaurant. And it was a really bizarre situation. And I had intended to come in and blast them on air today.
Right.
And I had warned them that they were facing that by their attitude and recalcitrance. And they didn't care. No. But I went to the third party to get a refund for my order. It was a food delivery from a very fine restaurant in town. I was treating myself and another. And I got the full recompense. I got the refund.
Right.
So I thought, at this point, for me to call them out by name would be vengeful.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to make their life more difficult at this point. I was made whole. Let's leave it at that. Do you agree, or should I smash and burn them to the ground?
I think in the 360-degree world that we live in now, based on what you dealt with, I would have liked to have seen you post that online as far as a Google review, because companies need to know that when people give good reviews or bad reviews, their response online matters. Google looks at that. They look at your complete digital footprint. How are you treating customers when they have complaints, and how are you treating customers when they have good things to say about you?
I did post a review.
Right.
And it might have engendered the response I received from that third party,
right,
which was the refund.
Right.
But you make a really good point that people don't pay attention to good reviews.
No, they read bad reviews.
They read the bad reviews.
Right. Overwhelmingly.
So you would make – you would take that and think that a company would be really interested in not getting them. You would think.
Well,
I don't want a bad review.
No matter how good of a company you are, you never know how you're going to affect someone on a given day. But how you respond to that person is what people find most compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always tell companies, don't expect that you're going to have good reviews all the time. Because I've had companies that basically go out there and they just put nothing but good reviews on their website. And I say, don't do that.
Yeah.
Run a live feed of reviews on your website. If you're confident about the service that you provide, put it out there.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Happy Homemaker with Tim Andrews.
Yeah, who's going to be 58 this weekend.
You are.
Yeah.
You don't look a day over 52. No, you don't. You look good. You don't look as good as I do, but you look good.
Yeah.
You do.
The thing about getting older, Seth.
Yeah.
As you start hearing about friends who pass away and different things like that.
I know.
And I just had a very close friend pass away this weekend in his sleep.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it broke my heart. And it also made me realize that 58, when I've got a 9-year-old still at home, a 14 and a 19-year-old, how important it is that we take care of ourselves.
Yeah. Take care of ourselves. And really, you know, was this person in your age category, group? Couple thoughts on that, actually. You know, we often will say things like live for the day, seize the day, carpe diem, live every day like it's your last. And we need these reminders. Now, obviously, living every day as if it's your last doesn't mean you're going to go be doing your bucket list things. Oh, I'm not coming to work today. I'm going to go jump the Grand Canyon or whatever.
Right.
Jump the Grand Canyon, whatever. Hike the, whatever. Whatever the bucket list thing is. It doesn't mean that in my mind. You know what I think it means? the way I've kind of tried to process it, and I fail, God knows I fail, but the way I've tried to process it is think of how you would want people to remember you if it were your last day.
Agreed.
And try and carry yourself that way.
And this guy did.
Isn't that special?
He was a wonderful human being.
Yeah.
And he was very fit.
Yeah.
He just happened to...
It happens.
You know, God wanted him at that time.
You know, when we grew up, because you're just about five years older than me. We grew up relatively in the same era. If someone died, was it a heart attack or something like that?
We don't know all the details yet.
Presumably. If we were told someone died at age, if we were in elementary school and one of our parents' friends died at the age of 58, it would not have been eyebrow raising.
Right.
It is today. But it wouldn't have been then. That's how quickly things have advanced and moved in this country.
Right.
When I was in elementary school, for that matter, when I was in high school, something like an overwhelming majority, like 80 or 90% of heart attacks were fatal. Something like that. And it wasn't that odd to have heart attacks in your late 50s or 60s.
Right.
Today, something like 90% of them are survivable.
Right.
That's happened since we were in high school.
It's
an incredible thing.
It's an incredible thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But 58, yep. Yeah. It's not the years in your life, Rabbi Alush likes to tell us. It's the life in your years.
I love that saying.
Yeah, yeah. So, our condolences.
Thank you.
Something, don't lose the lesson, right?
Right.
That's Mother Teresa. I'm giving you Rabbi Alush and Mother Teresa and Edmund Burke and Tim Andrews.
Take care, my friend.
Thanks for coming in. All right, I'm Seth Leibson. I didn't know we were going to do that, but why not? Always time for Mother Teresa, Tim Andrews, and Edmund Burke. 602-508-0960. 602-5089-60. We shall be right back. Portions of the show brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. YRefi has a investment in a collateralized portfolio, a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it is not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Blessedly, YRefi is headquartered here locally. Their offices are right on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. You can visit with them. They encourage it. I've been there any number of times. They won't give you a sales pitch, and they won't ask you to sign anything. They leave the selling up to me. What is it you get with YRefi? Not just up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return. You get a lot of flexibility and control. There are absolutely no fees with YRefi. With YRefi, you can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. You can have peace of mind. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. Check them out at investyrefi.com. The word invest, the letter Y, then refy.com if you don't visit them in person. You can also call them at 888-YREFI-24. I found some audio from that Dearborn rally, that speaker from that Islamic Institute there. It's worse than I thought. I wanted to just give you a little audio from it if I have the technology. The crowd is shouting death to America.
Malcolm X said,
here he goes, Malcolm
X. We live in one of the rottenest countries that has ever existed on this earth. It's not Genocide Joe that has to go. It's the entire system that has to go. Any system that...
Can you imagine? It's not Genocide Joe that has to go. It's the entire system that has to go. After we quote Malcolm X that this is the most rotten country that's ever existed. How do you believe anything they say when they say things like that? No, really honest question. When someone tells you this is the worst country, this is the rottenest country, and they quote it, obviously not because they disagree with it, but because they are validating it. When they say that this is the rottenest country that's ever existed, and you think about countries that exist now and have existed in the past, because the quote is has ever existed, but let's just confine it to right now. And you're talking about a country where you are fully able and legally able to say that, you know it's not true. You just know it's not true. At what point does the Gilman amnesia kick in to make yourself question whether anything else they say has validity, factual or moral? Factual or moral? You know what I can guarantee you won't happen as a result of this speech? I can guarantee you. that the FBI that was dispatched to school board meetings in Virginia and Florida will not be dispatched to Dearborn. That's how rotten this country is. We'll be right back.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.